Israel and the Palestinian Authority are expected to resume direct talks in Washington on Thursday. Ahead of the talks, Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu says two conditions must be met before they can result in any agreement.
We will insist that every future agreement will be rooted on effective security arrangements in the field and on the recognition of the right of the Jewish people to a national homeland, but also based on security arrangements to ensure that peace lasts.
The Israeli premier talked of these conditions in an address to his Likud party on Monday. Israel has refused to consider any preconditions for talks from the Palestinian side. This while construction of settlements in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem al-Quds remains a major hurdle for the talks. Acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas says Israel will be held responsible if the new negotiations fail over the settlements issue. Israel's partial 10-month freeze on the construction of settlements will come to an end on September 26. Tel Aviv has so far made no commitment to extend the partial freeze.
Well, meanwhile, the leader of the Palestinian National Initiative Party has called for a major rally in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. This to protest against the Palestinian Authority's upcoming direct talks with Israel. Our correspondent Asari Al-Khalili reports.
As the Palestinian Authority officials are getting prepared to sit face-to-face with Israel leaders on the negotiating table, the majority of the Palestinian people show no support for the coming talks. The negotiations will resume in Washington on September 2nd, weeks before a 10-month Israeli freeze of constructions in the West Bank. The National Initiative Party, Mustafa al-Barghouti, accused the PA of bowing to U.S. and Israeli pressure. He also stressed that the Palestinian public rejects talks with Israel that are not based on a clear reference.
Because there are no clear terms of reference, and because there is no real freeze of Israeli settlements, the vast majority of the Palestinian people today in Palestine and outside Palestine are against going to negotiations under these circumstances and without sufficient guarantees from the international community.
Mr. Barghouti also slammed the PA for banning his party's anti-negotiations activities and promised to hold a major rally in Ramallah on Wednesday.
We had Oslo, we had White River, we had Annapolis. And where do we stand today? Since Oslo up till now, the number of settlers have increased by 300%. And the number of settlements have increased by 100%.
On Sunday, acting PA chief Mahmoud Abbas accused Israel of threatening the negotiations by showing no readiness to freeze settlement construction and warned that renewed settlement activity would torpedo the talks.
Israel will be responsible for the failure of the talks if it continues expanding settlements in the Palestinian territories occupied in 1967.
Under U.S. pressure, Israel in November imposed a partial 10-month moratorium on new construction in West Bank settlements, with the exception of East Jerusalem al-Quds. But now, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he never told the U.S. administration a settlement freeze would be renewed.
We have had enough of these negotiations, which have only resulted in more settlements and divisions between the West Bank and the Gaza Strip.
Most of the PLO factions, in addition to the Hamas movement and the Palestinian public, have rejected talks. Despite the lack of consensus, the PLO's executive committee decided to resume the negotiations.
Plans have been made for U.S. President Barack Obama to host a meeting of Israeli, Palestinian Authority, Egyptian and Jordanian leaders on September 1st, on the eve of the formal relaunch of negotiations the following day at the U.S. State Department. Sari Al-Khalili, Press TV, Ramallah.
Joe Biden is in Iraq ahead of Washington's deadline for a troop withdrawal from the war-torn country.
The United States has set August 31st as a deadline for the end of its so-called combat mission in Iraq. Biden landed in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad, on Monday. The White House says he's slated to meet with Iraqi leaders during his three-day visit to call for an end to the political impasse in the country. Biden's National Security Advisor Tony Blinken says the U.S. is planning to ramp up its engagement in Iraq. The American vice president has paid many visits to Iraq in a bid to urge its politicians to form a government.
Another bloody day for the U.S. led forces in Afghanistan. 8 foreign troops have died in the war-torn country. 7 American soldiers have been killed in 2 separate bomb attacks in the south of the country. 5 of them died in a single incident. The exact locations of the attacks are not yet known. Meanwhile, a Canadian soldier has died in hospital of injuries sustained earlier this month. He was wounded when a roadside bomb detonated during a patrol in the southern Panjwai district. Nearly 480 foreign soldiers have been killed in Afghanistan so far this year.
In Pakistan, floodwaters have begun to recede, but health experts warn that the real problem might just be starting in the flooded areas. They say millions of people are now at risk from diseases, food shortages and malnutrition. At least 80 people have so far been killed by waterborne diseases. Early on Monday, 9 more people, including children, were killed of gastric flu in some eastern and southern areas. Doctors blame the increasing death toll from gastric flu on contaminated food and water, as well as insanitary conditions at the relief camps. The WHO says cases of malaria are on the rise too. Massive floods triggered by torrential monsoon have hit a fifth of Pakistan over the past month. At least 1,600 people are confirmed dead. Many more have been displaced. The Indian Parliament has finally cleared a draft law that aims to open the country's civilian nuclear market to foreign companies.
The Congress Party-led government and opposition groups have fiercely squabbled over the nuclear liability bill. The legislation was approved after a stormy debate on Monday. It's part of a nuclear pact India signed with the U.S. in 2008 that granted it access to foreign atomic technology. Opposition groups called the deal a compromise on India's sovereignty. They also insist on stricter measures to hold foreign suppliers liable in case of a nuclear accident. The bill will be signed into law by India's president before a visit by his U.S. counterpart in November.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-il has highlighted the importance of the, quote, rising generation in what many analysts believe to be a reference to a succession plan. Kim is said to be preparing a handover of power to his 27-year-old son, Kim Jong-un. The North Korean leader was recently on a 5-day trip to China to reportedly garner support for the eventual succession. During a meeting with Chinese President Hu Jintao, he's reported to have stressed the need to make sure that the next generation of leaders will maintain friendly ties. The senior Kim also reportedly told China that Pyongyang is prepared to return to the 6-party talks on its nuclear program. Meanwhile, the U.S. has imposed new sanctions on North Korean citizens and businesses.
In the United Nations in Vienna, the first ever International Day Against Nuclear Tests was observed with a photo exhibition of Kazakhstan portraying the aftermath of the nearly 500 nuclear explosions detonated there. The country used to be an epicenter for nuclear tests by the former Soviet Union till 1991, when its test site was closed down with a presidential decree.
The first observance of the International Day Against Nuclear Tests was marked in the United Nations in Vienna with a joint exhibition of the Preparatory Commission for the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty Organization and Kazakhstan. The Kazakh exhibition includes photographs showing the effects of nuclear testing in the country.
There is a message. The message is that a country can be prosperous without nuclear weapons. A country can be respected without nuclear weapons.
From 1945 to 1996, over 2,000 nuclear tests have been carried out in over 60 different locations around the world by the United States, the former Soviet Union, France, the UK and China. Of these 2,000 nuclear explosions, nearly 500 were detonated by the former Soviet Union at Semipalatinsk in Kazakhstan, with devastating effects on the surrounding environment.
1.5 million people suffered from the consequences of the radiation and contamination. A huge area has been taken from the economic use.
The cumulative power of the nuclear explosions at Semipalatinsk, both above and below the ground, is believed by experts to be equal to 2,500 Hiroshima bombs. People in the area around the former test site are continuing to suffer in the form of birth defects and mutations, immune system deficiencies, cancer and other diseases. The photographs exhibited in the UN Rotunda show the environmental and human consequences of the nuclear tests and, in contrast, the rebuilt region now in the 21st century.
Well, Kazakhstan has experienced for quite a long period of time a lot of nuclear tests that has been conducted on our territory, and we know from the first hand what does it mean.
The Semipalatinsk test site has been closed with the official presidential decree by Kazakhstan on the 29th of August 1991, the day that also stopped nuclear testing in the country. Nuclear explosions. Most recent nuclear tests have been carried out by North Korea in 2006 and 2009.
As the United Nations observed the first International Day Against Nuclear Tests, an estimated 20,000 weapons remain in the world's arsenal. The day was marked with a call to all who possess nuclear weapons to close the door to their deployment, a move that experts say is critical towards their ultimate elimination. Eva Manasieva, Press TV, from the United Nations in Vienna.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the foreign ministry is in charge of the country's foreign policy affairs. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remark during a meeting with President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and his cabinet. Ayatollah Khamenei said the government should above all continue to stick to Islamic values. He also referred to the developments following Iran's presidential election in 2009. Ayatollah Khamenei said the post-election events emboldened the enemies, but the nation and the government managed to press ahead with confidence and perseverance.
The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says fuel for the Tehran Research Reactor will be produced within a year. Ali Akbar Salehi says Iran has enriched 25 kilograms of its uranium to the required 20% level so far. He also says Tehran has no intention to enrich all of its stockpiled uranium to that level, underscoring that it will be stopped as soon as fuel is produced. Iran began enriching uranium to 20% in February. The move came after the UN nuclear watchdog and the P5 Plus One failed to provide Iran with fuel for the Tehran Research Reactor. Most of the medical isotopes used in Iran are produced at the facility.
Where is the reset? That's what Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin says as he sounds ever more skeptical about the, about the U.S. intentions for a reset in ties with the Kremlin. Here's more.
Putin has voiced unease about U.S. missile plans in Europe. He says Washington's ongoing talks with several European countries on hosting missile interceptors run counter to the reset of ties promised by the administration of U.S. President Barack Obama.
We have spoken about our stance on the missile defense in Europe. It looks like we have agreed there won't be countermissiles, and the issue on radars has not yet been solved in the Czech Republic. Great. And practically, immediately they announced that the same is being planned for other countries in Europe. So where's the reset?
In September 2009, Obama shelved a plan by his predecessor George W. Bush to place an anti-missile radar facility in the Czech Republic, as well as interceptors in Poland. However, Washington began talks with Bulgaria and Romania this year on hosting anti-ballistic missiles interceptors. Earlier, Moscow accused Washington of violating dozens of provisions of nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons treaties. Russia's foreign ministry said the U.S. breached its duties under the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty. Washington and Moscow managed to settle a mysterious spy case that made headlines worldwide in June. But it remains to be seen whether they would be able to resolve a host of other thorny issues preventing better ties between the Cold War rivals.
You're killing the people here.
In the winter capital of Indian-controlled Kashmir, known as the City of Hindu Temples, a mosque is a rare sight. But this has not stopped Muslims there from enjoying the holy month of Ramadan together as a community.
Ramadan is the ninth month of the Islamic lunar calendar. Muslims say it is a time to purify the soul and refocus attention on God. It is time for the Muslims to break their fast on iftar. As they are congregated in this mosque, these scenes are rare in the Jammu, winter capital of Indian administered Jammu and Kashmir, also known as the City of Temples.
From all over the world, foreigners come here during the month of Ramadan to see how we celebrate it.
Jammu is known for the temples. As almost every corner, one can see a temple. Millions of people practicing Hindu religion throng to this place every year to worship. Despite temples, there's a mosque in the city center where Muslims can congregate for prayers, particularly during the month of Ramadan. Muslim residents believe that this month is really special for them, that can bring them together.
We 20-30 people go to each other's home, recite Quran and pray on iftar. That is how we spend time with each other.
After breaking the fast, one can see hustle and bustle in the market. Muslims spend time for purchasing or enjoying some local delicacies.
Even though Muslim population is very less in the city of temples, but Ramadan is being celebrated with religious fervor, amity and harmony. Akil Hassan, Jammu, for Press TV.